Let us look at, like, hey, what can I do in this kitchen to make the job simpler, faster, cleaner? And you begin to look at all the stupid things that we impose upon ourselves in the kitchen that we don't like. It drives me buggy. It drives you crazy. Pans where all the food sticks on the bottom, it takes you years to get the food off. That's stupid. That's totally stupid. You know? Can't. You know those things that you buy and you have to be like Einstein to figure out how to open them? And they have a way of taking all the skin off your knuckles, just getting it open, you know? That stuff's stupid. You just mail it back to the people and say, this is stupid, you keep it. None of it, a very little of it, is designed for us. Trash. The kitchen, there's as much trash in the kitchen as there is food, is there not? Where's the trash go? The greatest invention we ever came up with was this stupid plastic bag that breaks. You know, there ought to be a system for hauling the trash. You know, like 9 white mice with a little car on a tunnel. You stick the trash in the car and a mouse whistle and go down an underground tunnel and take to the front of the house. There's no way to get rid of the trash. What happened to our eyeballs and the stuff? You know, when you look at everything, you can look and you can see how beautifully everything can be designed if you design it for yourself. And isn't it neat when you do come up with an invention like the 9 white mice? And people come to your house and they say, what is new or interesting about your life? And you say, not much, but we've trained all these mice. How do you get them to start? I mean, how do they know when to stop to start? You say, it's easy. You just go, biddy, biddy, biddy. And they start. And then you go, biddy, biddy, biddy. And they stop. But you know when you go into somebody's house and it's inventive, it's beautiful, it's like a creation of them. Mm. And it might be wild, it might be literally one of those things where the canary pecks on the wall falls down, da da da, da. But it's fun to look at. You know? A house where it's totally interesting, where somebody's used their hand and built the thing to make it comfortable for them. So I'm asking you today to not just look at left brain, right brain, fear, love, and so on, but let us look at every part, the food you eat, the way you store it, the clothes you wear, the bed you sleep in. There are beds that are not designed for people at all. They're not designed for people at all. The backs give out a long time before the bed does. Why are you paralyzed? Well, I bought this bed. I bought this bed 19 years ago. Now I'm paralyzed. I can hardly walk up the stairs to bed to get in it. So what do you do now? Well, now I sleep on the floor. How does it feel? Much better, actually. God. Japanese bed? Yeah, so do I. They're the best beds in the world, I think. Futon. Is that what it is, futon? Yeah. I think it's the best bed because you have a nice, hard, solid thing. And the funny thing is, the first time you lie in it, right, you get the futon, it's just having sort of bong, you know, think, what happened to the springs? Like, what am I sleeping out on the shelf in the windows? It's a concrete platform here. But it is good, and it's really healthy, you know. So, okay, so we're going to take a break now. I'm going to shorten the lunch hour. Well, normally we have a two-hour lunch, but we just don't have time today for that. The way John gets you to love him is he buys you lunch, right? So anyway, well, that's interesting, though, isn't it? It's interesting to look at the lag, or look at the, like, what do I vote for myself? Do I vote the best place, or do I vote the crummiest place? You know? Do I vote a comfortable position in the cinema, or do I stand at the back? Why am I standing at the back? You know? And each time we look at that, it's uncomfortable. But we look at all the things we actually do to ourselves. We constantly punish ourselves. Why? Because we want people to love us. Anybody else? Did you get what you wanted? Did you get what you wanted? Yeah, okay. Did you ask for what you want? Like when a waiter says, can I get you? Did you ask for it?
Yes,
you can. Can I serve you? Surprisingly enough, sir, you can, yeah. What do you want? I need my shoes cleaning while I'm having lunch. So there we go. We begin to look at how easy it is to manipulate the reality without infringing upon others. And let us just look at infringement as a moment before we go on to life's purposes and so on. Let us look at that. What constitutes infringement and what doesn't constitute infringement? Basically speaking, any time you make a decision for another person, you're infringing on them. So if you say to somebody, wonderful day, isn't it? That's a kind of infringement, because what's the answer to that? No, it ain't, you silly bum. You know, it's like you put them into it. There's a shortage of water in the southern states. Who says? Who says there is? There is no more, and we give our opinion to people, And we ask them to accept that as fact. It's a hard life, isn't it? It is. That's not my experience. I find it easy. I find it totally simple. In fact, it's so simple, I'm thinking of leaving. if something doesn't happen. But we do that all the time. And you watch yourself. Watch yourself describe to somebody else a condition for them. Watch yourself do it. You know, and then when you see that, notice how that is very infringing, because you're saying, let me come and paint reality for you. So what we do when we try to stay away from infringement is we try not to coerce or manipulate people into doing things against their wish, and we try not to create a reality for them. We allow them to be whatever reality they want. It's extremely hard. It's extremely hard not to infringe upon people, because it's so easy to do it. This restaurant's dreadful. He says it's dreadful. They might like it. You know? I don't think we have enough time. Who says we haven't? I don't think that we're going to make enough profit out of this. Who is setting up how much profit we have to make? I don't know whether or not we will ever survive. Who says? You might not, but I'm going. And as you look at that, we understand that we paint our limitations and we give it to the other people. Absolutely, categorically, definitely, we give it to them. When they infringe upon you, you don't allow them to do it. It's the same way as we were saying before. What happens when negativity comes up from the mind? You cannot combat it. All you can say is, I don't accept that. I do not accept this limitation that my ego is trying to sell me on today. I do not accept that there are no taxis. How many times have you gone out in the rain and somebody said to you, ah, there's no taxis, man, it's raining. Like somehow, some way, when it rains, all the taxis melt, you know? It's like when they sell you unemployment. There's only one kind of unemployment you ever need to worry about, and that's the unemployment of one, yourself. There's incredible unemployment in Victoria. Who says? I'm working. Where's the unemployment? You know, and you begin to look at what you sell to people, and you begin to look at what you sell yourself. Most infringement takes place within families, where each of the members of the family infringes upon the other as to what they are supposed to be or do. Now, children, the bringing up and rearing and educating and nurturing of children automatically involves a certain amount of infringement. And they come to be with you, and so they accept the infringement. Their higher self knows the infringement is going to be there, and they accept it. But the name of the game would be to try to empower the child to understand its strength, to make it confident, to work on itself. Image and to allow it not to be infringed, and for you not to infringe upon it. That doesn't mean the kid runs wild, but the point is there's a way of developing it so the child does not feel infringed upon. How many of you did not feel infringed upon when you were a child? It's impossible. Everybody spent all their time telling you what to do, telling you what reality actually was, and you were infringed upon horrendously, but you chose it, and now we're chosen to come out. Okay, let us wrap with a bit from the morning session. We talked of a physical hemisphere of influence, an emotional hemisphere of influence, a mental hemisphere of influence, and then this metaphysical understanding or metaphysical hemisphere of influence. Your metaphysical hemisphere of influence is many things, but one of the things that it is the difference between your expectations and your limitations. Okay? That is the hemisphere of influence that you maintain. It is also a lot of other things, including the life force, the condition of your body, the power that you believe in yourself, your ability to laugh, your ability to love, and to respect all living things. But one of the main things it is an exact balance between your limitations and your expectancies. And I don't mean fantasy yearnings. I mean those things that you know you're going to get. Okay? Because we talked before that, remember, the fantasy yearnings have very little power metaphysically. They don't come about. You know? Almost by the very definition that you are yearning for them and they have this fantasy. But I'm talking expectancy in the sense of, I expect to be in this position. I expect to receive. I expect to go to India. I expect to be married. I expect to have children. I expect to own a sailboat. I expect to teach the people around me. I expect to be able to donate $1 million to Swami Ramidabhami and whatever. And this is my expectancies. Okay, let's look at it like this very quickly, just to wrap and pack these ideas from this morning. If you look, let me do the oscillations per second thing here, so everybody knows what we're talking about here. Benefit the others. Are the rest of you just land on yourselves for a moment? Okay, here we go. 20,000, 40,000, 60,000, let us say 200,000, okay? We look at the life force within us, okay? That energy that you were looking at between your hands this morning, and we say, what is the oscillation of that life force? Because all life, the whole of the universe, is basically the tension or the movement between polarities. You know, that's what electricity is, okay? It's basically this thing, these forces moving against each other, the tension creates the power, okay? The life force within you is basically the two polarities pressing against each other, and that's what creates the life force, okay? This life force that's in you is moving, as all energy is. It has oscillation. We look at it and we pick an arbitrary figure because we cannot tell what the oscillation is. But let us say that the oscillation of a man, the regular Joe Blow or Jane Blow in the street, is 20,000 cycles a second. Okay? You're welcome. Are you Jane Blow? Okay. 20,000 cycles a second. And let us say that that describes the oscillation or the amount of life force that that person basically expresses in the street. They're just a regular person in a regular job with a regular life, with a regular husband, with a regular little kid, with living in a regular house, regular little cat, regular superannuation, regular little car. They belong to a regular little church. They subscribe to regular little magazines. They eat regular little food, okay? Here's our 20,000 cycles a second person, okay? They live in a dimension that's in and around 20,000 cycles a second. And reality comes to them at 20,000 cycles a second. And when they're feeling good about themselves, they may perhaps rise to 22,000 cycles a second. When they're feeling lousy or they've had too much to drink, they may drop down to 18,000 cycles a second. But that, let's say, hypothetically, understanding that these thousands of cycles a second is just arbitrary, is basically the dimension that they live in. Okay? They live in that wave band of energy. In that 20,000 cycles a second energy wave band are all sorts of things that can happen to them. Okay? Good things and bad things. At the top of the cycle, the good things. At the bottom of the cycle, the bad things. Although in the universal law, there's no good and bad. There's just energy. But they would have a decision about whether it's high energy or low energy. Low energy events tend not to be so pleasing. You know? Somebody drops like a crate of bananas on your head or something, 18,000 cycles a second. You know, now to the universal law, it does not make a judgment. It doesn't say, well, that was lousy, because it's on the side of the bananas, perhaps. But the fact is that you will make a decision on it emotionally and say, this was not a big event for me. I'm now 2'2". I used to be 6'5". Okay. So they live in a dimension of consciousness that is between, let's say, this 18 to 22,000 cycles a second, and in there are probability patterns and possibility patterns. The possibility patterns are on the outside edge of the dimension. The probability patterns are in the middle. So probability patterns will be in around 20,000 cycles a second. Possibility patterns will be at 23,000 cycles a second for that particular person. Because 23,000 cycles a second is right on the outside edge of their hemisphere of existence, or their hemisphere of influence. Okay, in there is AIDS, car crashes, gonorrhea, the tax inspector. There's all sorts of good stuff in there for you, you know? There's all sorts of possibilities. There's also neat possibilities. You know, a weekend at the beach with your family, falling in love with another 20,000 cycles a second person, and so on. All that. The people that you know are more or less always in there with you. And if you know people that are not in 20,000 cycles a second, you won't be attracted to them at all. You know, you'll only see them, they'll be there for 10 minutes and they'll be gone, or they are so grody, make you feel sick, you can't spend a minute with them. Why? Because they're solidly in 16,000 cycles a second, okay? All right, this oscillation of energy is that dimension that the man in the street lives in, okay? This is his world, and there are events in there. As he moves with his sea of energy out into life, any event that is congruent with his energy pattern comes to him inside that dimension. So car crash can come, finding $20 on the street can come, a disease can come, a fight with a neighbor can come, somebody giving you a second-hand car that they don't need can come, somebody offering you a new opportunity can come, but there's only, you're in that, your destiny rides in that dimension. As you begin to work upon your energy, as you begin to work upon the life force that's inside of you, your energy begins to climb. Okay, and then suddenly you're up here around 40,000 cycles a second. Then you have the possibility of anything that's below you and everything that's slightly above you, and your energy has more than doubled because the horizon has got bigger and bigger and bigger. Let me explain to you. Let us say we could describe Joe Blow's limitations at 20,000 cycles a second, and let us say his expectancy was 30,000 cycles a second. The difference would be a lifestyle of 10,000 cycles a second. Now, if he reduced his limitations by just a little bit to 15,000 cycles a second, and he increased his expectancy from 30 to 50, suddenly his lifestyle is 3.5 times faster. And as you raise your energy, life will come to you quicker. And some of you have already experienced a speeding up of the process. Things that used to take years only take weeks now. When you think about something, instead of it never being there, suddenly it pitches up. And we begin to see that as you move your energy faster and faster, reality comes to you quicker and quicker. As you have more of this life force, your ability to pull money is obvious. It's so simple, it's no problem to it. Okay, then raising your energy further and further and further, what would happen when you got to 200,000 cycles a second? Your energy is moving 10 times faster than the average guy. Do you think he would like to have you hanging around with him? No, but he would be exhilarated by it. Momentarily he would, because when he hangs out with you, his energy goes up. When his energy goes up, he feels a little bit more safe. Because down here, it ain't safe at all. Down here, it's Russian bloody roulette. Anything can happen. You see? But the more energy you express, the less and less and less disaster that can happen. At 200,000 cycles a second, it's impossible for you to have a car crash. You can't be there. You cannot be there. You'll arrive late. They said, where's the car crash? I said, it was 20 minutes ago. You're late, mate. You can't be there. You move in a dimension where negative experiences are not there. Because restriction, stagnation, negativity have actual energy patterns that you can describe. If your energy pattern is not a part of that energy pattern, you can't be there. And people say, well, is that coincidence? Is it luck? No, it's just energy. You just can't be there. It's impossible for you to penetrate the zone because you're not that energy. Okay, as we look at the hemisphere of influence concept this morning, we see that a small reduction in fear and limitation and a small reduction in expectancy, and suddenly every one of you can walk out of here 3 times stronger than you walked in. Ain't it easy?
Increase in expectation.
What?
Increase in expectation.
Did I say it around the wrong way?
Yeah.
Just testing. Just testing. All right. So if you increase your expectancy and you decrease the limitation, it's obvious your lifestyle has to improve. If you come out of love and service, it's obvious that your prices can go up. If you come out of energy, it's obvious that you pull out of competition. And what is competition? Competition is a bunch of people saying what? Limited supply. There's no limited supply. We'll sell all there is and the rest can work it out for themselves. There's no limited supply. Competition says all the tarot card readers in this city charge $9 a reading, so that's what I've got to do. All the tarot card readers in the city might be lousy. My reading's $100. And if you don't want a tarot card reading, I'm delighted. We'll sit on the beach. And we'll talk about the wind coming past. You see, once we begin to pull out, we pull out of the emotion and you become free. If you can pull out of fear, you become free. Out of limitation, you're free. Okay, now the very next move is, we're getting you out of that. Now, what the hell do you want? What do you want? You know what I want. I don't know what you want. What do you want? So now we're going to look at getting very, very clear about what you want. Understanding you can make a decision today about what you want. And you can start to move towards it, and as you move towards it, you suddenly realize that's not what you want. Fine, in the moving towards it, that's what helped you come to the decision. So going towards it wasn't a waste of time. Then as you move towards it, you realize that you don't want to be a megalomaniac and own the whole of downtown Melbourne. Really, what you want to do is write books for children in Braille, and off you go and you do it, or whatever it is you want to do. So in this set today, we're going to now look at the purposes and goals of life, so that we can come to an understanding of that. And then we're going to do the first of the Theta Meditations. Okay, very basically, each one of you has a purpose that you're here for. Yes, John?
Whatever you're moving now is exactly driving to what you want in the future. Within a...
It's not necessarily going to what you want in the future, no. But wherever you are is wherever you are. You know, we looked at this morning, past, present, and future. The only place that you can be is now, is it not?
Yes.
Here now is your only option. So even if you're absolutely up to your eyes in muck and bullets, now is the only place that we can be. So when people say, I'm in the right place at the right time, they're right. They are in the right place at the right time. However, sometimes the right place and the right time is not exactly the most pleasing place to be. You know, like being in debt or being in prison or being sick or in difficulty or, you know, chaos or something. You know, so I would never say this condition has been granted to me and just roll up and leave it. You know, if there's any kind of grungy, anything that you don't like, okay, you say, fine, this is part of what I've created, but I'm going to get out of here as fast as I bloody can. Because we're not suffering servant. It doesn't understand that suffering servant energy, you know. Hey, this was awful. I've learned out of that. Let's get out of here quick. So we're looking at purposes, okay? Within the purpose of your life, you have also, the purpose can change, and within the purposes, you have goals, and the goals can change. But usually speaking, the purpose of your life is a very deep inner spiritual, almost holy reason why you're here. Many of us are here to understand and to understand to love each other. Not an emotional love, a detached love, you know, allowing the people to be. Some of us are here to go beyond poverty. Some of us are here to bring forward great creativity. Some of us are here to serve humanity in some way or another. Okay, not because there's any obligation to serve them, but because we feel intuitively that by serving humanity, we would learn the most for ourselves, you know? Some of us are here for whatever reasons we're here for, and each one of you has that. Some of us are here to learn to deal with our body and to feel confident. Some of us are here to go beyond the relationships with our mother and to get the hell out of there. Some of us are here to learn to experience motherhood in children. Some of us are here to learn to experience physicalness, masculine physicalness. And each one of us has a purpose in life, and each one of us has a creativity. And creativity is basically a physical manifestation of the God force. When you create something, you're bringing an energy, a consciousness from within, and you're pushing it through a physicalness, through the physical plane, which is also consciousness, and you're manifesting a whatever it is, a flower arrangement, a painting, a book, or whatever, a computer program, and you bring this life force or this God force into the physical plane as something, and you say, here it is. Then the name of the game about the mastery of money is to find somebody that will pay you for it. Perhaps we're here to learn to live life unconditionally. Unconditionally. You know what we say to you? Try for 30 days not having an opinion. Try it. Try for 30 days. You're driving buggy. You'll drive yourself buggy. You know? What do you think about? I try not to. What do you think about? I try not to. What do you think about? I don't think about it. What do you think about the situation in Colombia? I try not to. Or the other answer is, what do you think? Then you put it back to them and they'll tell you about their life, and that's what they really want to do, is tell you about their life. They don't want to hear what you want. Yes?
I did that, and I found I frustrated people because they tried to make me force an opinion.
Right.
The more I said I don't want to offer an opinion, the more they got frustrated.
Right.
They tried to keep forcing me to offer an opinion. I
right.
said, no, I don't want to be judgmental.
Right. Yeah. And what are they saying, if you think about
they're
it?
They're getting angry.
Right. They're getting angry because they're saying, how dare you leave the mindset that we're a part of?
They said I was copying out of society.
Right. Yeah, because
they saw it through their eyes.
Right, right. And in fact, they're right, because you are copping out of society, but you don't want to be in a bloody society.
Yeah.
What did you do? I voted with my feet. I left. You know? Yes.
In Melbourne, you only have to say you don't vote for a football team, and it just falls apart. It's so much expected that you've got a football
You've got to support a football team?
That if your life doesn't depend on the football team, well...
You've got to be some kind of total scumbag, right? Yeah. One of my dear friends is a man called Robert, and he's an artist. He's a painter. Very inventive guy. And he's Jewish. And he was born, interestingly enough, in Germany. And he was in Germany in 1930 when the National Socialist Party started bashing up Jewish folk. And Robert was a part of this. And he experienced it and he watched it happening. And I said to Robert, I said, well, it must have been very difficult for the Jewish people with all this persecution going on and the difficulty. And of course, in the 1930s, they didn't know the war was coming, but it, you know, things were getting hard and difficult. And I said to Robert, I said, what did you do, Robert? He said, I left. You left? I just left. I said, well, then what happened? He says, I went to Austria. And I said, well, what happened when they started to come into Austria? He says, I left Austria. And I said, is this how you arrived in Stockholm, Sweden? He says, yeah, I just left. And when you think about it, each one of us votes. You know, why stick around? Now, some people would wind up so within the mindset that they can't get out. So they would be in a ghetto, and they would literally pay the Nazis a train ride to Auschwitz. Pay them. Here. How much do you want? Well, we're charging 200 marks. Is it return or one way? Just one way. And they voted for it. They voted for it. It would be like the race consciousness becomes such an ingrown toenail, such an imploding parabola of energy that you can't get out of it. So you couldn't get out of it. And so they just went down with the ship. We ask you to look at the people and you don't go down with them. You honor them by stepping out. Literally, physically, perhaps you move to a new neighborhood. Perhaps you, but you step out in your consciousness and you become free. You become free.
Even if that means letting the people you love behind.
Loving them is honoring them, but letting them be, even if it means leaving them behind. Hard.
It's not easy.
Let me ask you something. Would you like to be free, or would you like to die of cancer at 52? Which would you prefer?
Natural.
Right. Okay. But most people don't vote for their freedom. They'll say, okay, I'll die of cancer at 52. I'll hang around with these people and die. What you do is you come away from the people just long enough to strengthen yourself. Then you can go back in a detached way. And when your mother, father, brother, and sister all fighting with each other, you sit in a corner and read the paper. And they say, how come you don't want to get this fight? Somebody in a cartoon is going to fight you later.
If you're moving away from these people to the point where they're looking at you that, well, look, you're there, and they don't obviously like it because they want to draw you back into their circle.
Right.
And living with them, being husband or wife or family, you've got to break away. And if it means breaking away from your husband or your wife, what do you do then?
I mean, you just break away. Because do you want to live, let's say, for example, you met a guy when you were 16 and you've been married to him. How old are you now? Don't tell us you don't want to. Let's say a few years ago you met a guy and you married him, okay? Let us say that your energy is so far beyond him that he just won't come along anymore. He won't do anything to raise himself. Do you sentence yourself to perpetual struggle?
I was thinking of using your tapes to play them at night so they listen to them.
But that would be an infringement.
Yes.
Because what you're doing is you're saying what they believe isn't okay and you're going to change it.
But you could take them with you then, hopefully.
But he would be infringing upon them, wouldn't he? No?
Yes, sure.
You would have to ask them whether or not that was what they wanted.
They have to step forward to make choices.
The question remains, why do you want them to come with you? What is attachment for you?
Well, she loves him.
Yeah.
Well, she loves him. But the point about love is that you're involved in emotional love and there's a love where you can step across, be strong, come back and then help them. But it's true. Sometimes in a relationship, you have to leave the people. There's no other way. You know, and the God force did not ask you to sit in a crummy relationship for 40 years. That's nonsense. It doesn't ask you to do that. And if you say, well, it says in the holy book you're supposed to do that, you have to talk to the holy book because it doesn't know what the hell it's talking about. Because the God force does not ask you to suffer. Does not ask you to marry a gorilla and stay with him for 90 years. It doesn't ask you to do that. Well, I put in for struggle, universal law. So every Saturday night he comes around and bumps me on the nose. Oh, okay, I think I'll sit and suffer. You see, you're not asked to suffer. You come together for growth, not for life. If you're growing in the relationship, it has beauty, it has friendship, it has love, it has caring, then tally-ho, you know? But every so often you want to review it. And if he's not doing it, you might want to discuss it with him. Look, oi, this is the plan. You know, we can't live like this. It's not endorsing me. Okay, let us work a plan where I'll endorse you and let you be free and you let me be free. And we'll both be free together and we'll come together because we love each other. And if he says no, sayonara. Get another. That's the way the life goes. That's the way the cookie grumbles. Okay. Okay, what are we going to do? What we're going to do in this set is this. We're going to try to clarify what it is we want, okay? Remembering, you've got to constantly ask yourself, what do you want? Oh, that reminds me of the... Oh, I've only got one dirty joke, but I'd like to share it with you. And it's not really a dirty joke, but it's a good one. And sometimes, there was... Denise helps me in the northwest of America, representing me to the TV station, the radio stations. And we were coming from this place right on the Canadian border. And I'd been working, I don't know how many hours, and I was falling asleep, and we started telling each other these jokes just to stay awake, you know, driving back to Seattle. And I remember this joke that I heard in New Jersey. Why New Jersey, I don't know, but I want to share it with you, okay? Here's one of these what do you want jokes. There's two little kids, it's not a real dirty joke, but it's set in an interesting place. There's two little kids playing in the sand outside a brothel, okay? And they're playing in the sand, and there's a gentleman walks up the steps of this brothel, and he knocks on the door, and a madame opens the door, and she says to this gentleman, what do you want? And he says to her, you know what I want. And she says, got any money? And he says, I've got $20. So she says to the guy, come in. So then a couple of minutes later, there's another gentleman caller, comes up the steps of the brothel. The kids are still playing in the sand, watching all this go on. He knocks on the door. The madame comes to the door, and she says to the guy, what do you want? And he says, you know what I want. She says, you got any money? And he says, I've got $20. And she says, fine, come in. So the kid's watching all this, and they can't figure out what the hell's going on, so they start looking to see how much money they got, and it turns out that between them, the two children, right, these two kids playing in the sand outside the bubble, have got 50 cents. So they clean up the 50 cents on their little shirts, and they walk up the step on the bottle, and they got this 50 cents in their hand, and they knock at the bottom of the door, and a madame comes and looks at them, and she says, "What do you want?" And the kids go, "You know what we want." And she says to them, "You got any money?" And they say, "Yeah, we got 50 cents. So they start walking in through the front door of the brothel. She grabs both of them by the hair, and she bangs their heads together. Bang! Right? And then she throws them down the stairs. Boom! And these kids tumble down the stairs, and they're in the sand. Well, they're dazed for a few minutes, and then they get up and they shake themselves down, and one kid says to the other, "If that's 50 cents, I couldn't take $20. I'm reminded of that joke when I say to you, "What do you want?" You know what I want. Well, the universal law doesn't know what you want. What do you want? Anyway, that was New Jersey.
New Jersey.
New Jersey, yeah.